This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Welcome to NetFront Presents. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by the beat reporter Matthew DeFranks. Well, it was a productive trip to Western Canada, but then, Matthew, predictably, that first game back from a road trip, very hard for the guys to get locked in, and it took them the better part of the game. They finally did get locked in, but a little too late. So kind of a downer after such a productive road trip.
Yeah. And, you know, they didn't really deserve a point last night against San Jose. The Sharks outplayed them pretty handily, I would say, particularly in the first 40 minutes. That first period, they were outshot 14-4. You know, they just made too many kind of simple errors, right? You had two odd man rushes, two 2-on-1s that were almost identical in that the defenseman pinches down the wall, a forward doesn't cover effectively for them at the point. You know, the Sharks chip the puck out, and suddenly it's a 2-on-1 going the other way, ends up in the back of the net. And, you know, the second one of those, when Jake Walman scores, was particularly damaging just because it came right after Braden Schenn pulled the Blues within one goal. So, you know, they were right there, kind of pushing to make it a game in the third period, cut it to one goal twice, and ultimately it was the mental mistakes that really did them in last night against San Jose. And, you know, this was a game that the Blues had worried about, to be quite honest. You know, there was a time almost 2 weeks ago, after the Blues lost to Philadelphia in overtime at home, where they first talked about changing the time of their morning skate because they wanted to get just a little more sleep out of their guys. You know, they flew back from Vancouver on Wednesday, landed back in St. Louis around 3:30 or so. And then, you know, they moved their morning skate back on Thursday. They kind of knew this would be an issue. The tiredness, weariness, whatever you want to call it. And it ended up proving correct. They just didn't have whatever they needed in the opening 40 minutes. And by the time they found it, they was already a little bit too late.
Yeah, the Sharks played the Blues tough earlier in the season, so it's not like the Blues are taking the team lightly. They've already seen the Sharks. They know they've got a lot of – Sharks have a lot of young skill. The Blues have had to scramble to get points against the Sharks this year. And then so by the time they get the third look at them, that's not the issue. It's just, you know, and fans maybe don't want to hear it, but jet lag's a thing. Jumping time zones a thing. When you're trying to play at a very high level, it requires a high level of concentration and great intensity. Physical, stamina, you know, the stamina and the freshness, all these things are required, and it is a thing. And there's the NHL is full of these trap doors in the schedule. There are a number of these games in the course of a schedule, and the Blues have two back to back coming out for this game that just are very difficult to handle.
Yeah, and this was, I think, the second time the Blues were returning from the Pacific time zone this season. They were out in Vegas after their road trip to start the year that went Seattle, San Jose, Vegas, came home, lost the home opener against Minnesota. You know, they're out in Vancouver after a trip that goes Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, and they come back home and lose to San Jose. So 0-2 this season when returning home after playing in the Pacific time zone. And, you know, that hasn't always been the case in recent years. I think I looked last year and, you know, I think they were 2-1 coming back from the West Coast. The year before was 1-0-1. The year before it was 1-0, and the year before that, when they had the West Division playing all the same seven teams all over and over again, they were 2-1-1. So it's not a hard and fast rule that when you come back from the West Coast, that first game back is a scheduled loss, so to speak. I mean, think about it. Before, in the last four seasons before this one, they were 6-2-2 in those types of games. And they're not all the same. It wasn't always one day between games. Sometimes there were 2 days in order to kind of recoup whatever rest you needed. But yeah, it's not a certainty that this was going to be the outcome. It was just one of those things they needed to be prepared for. And the Blues, they weren't really, because they expected their minds to be able to carry them through the first part when they didn't have their legs to lean on. And that just wasn't the case. They're making too many errors that led to San Jose goals.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because they want to be aggressive, and Montgomery wants them to be aggressive and try to apply pressure, try to gain offensive zone time. For stretches this year, offensive zone time been hard to come by. Got to sustain pressure. The D-men have to do their part to do that, but it's pretty basic, rotating back and being aware and being on top of that. Don't get caught watching the play it evolves. Make sure that you've got your stuff covered first, and so this is not it's not complicated. And it's not like they're going to have to say, okay, let's look at the X's and O's again. I think everybody knows what to do, and I guess it had to be the frustrating part for Montgomery, because this isn't anything radical that he's trying to instill.
Yeah, I mean, that's he is asking them to pinch more. He said that, but everyone knows that when a defenseman pinches, a forward's got to cover for them, and it's the F3, the high forward in the offensive zone that needs to do that. And that twice last night, that F3 didn't cover successfully. That puck kind of gets stalled a little bit on the wall. That forward stops. San Jose leaving the zone does not stop, and bam, odd man rush. So yeah, definitely not complicated, which is, I guess, both a good and a bad thing, right? You look at it and you say, well, very fixable, very, very easy to look at and say, all right, that needs to get going. That needs to happen here. And that's that. But the other side is, well, shouldn't be making kind of elementary mistakes like that. But the good news is for them, one game, and that doesn't really take away the charm of a 3-1 road trip that they just had through Western Canada, but it does kind of put a damper on it for sure.
One thing I wanted to touch on with the Sharks is that Macklin Celebrini is a real player. He again, I've mentioned on him before. He looks like he's could be a junior in high school, and he's really not that far removed from that age group. Really a special talent, and if you give him room to work, and the Blues did, my goodness, there's plenty there to work with. And I just look at him, it's dazzling, and I think I have an expectation that's going to work out very well for San Jose. We talked earlier about how the Connor Bedard thing's not working out so well in Chicago. That team's kind of stalled. It's not hard to like the Sharks after watching them play the Blues, because they've been tough on the Blues.
Yeah, and Celebrini, 9 points in 3 games against the Blues.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
12 points in 17 games against everyone else, and he's a 3 point per game player against the Blues. So, like, I know when I was in Dallas, Patrick Laine would just kill them every single time they played. Like, who is someone that there's always killed the Blues recently? Someone like in conference, in division, whatever. Was there someone that just like would kill the Blues every time they played them?
I think when you look back, Clayton Keller and Nick Schmaltz working together for the Utah Hockey Club, or then the Coyotes, they had a kind of couple year run of doing damage against our heroes.
Yeah, I do remember that from the last couple. Yeah, you every time they were having 2-3 point nights.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like that's the bad news is, Celebrini, you're right, he's what, 2 years removed from being a high school junior, as you would say, right?
Yeah, and it's just, boy, he's real. I know a guy who works in the organization, and they love where they are. They need to add another D-man probably, but they really like the goalie trade they made, and they like the second goaltender trade they made, because Kovalenko is going to give him some depth up front. He's going to be a good middle six guy for him. So that was interesting. I like what the Sharks have done, and I compare that to, again, the Blackhawks, and I just shake my head.
Yeah, I mean, well,
I do
what
like
Co
Mike Grier, by the way, former Blues draft pick. I do like what Mike's done there in San Jose.
Well, it's funny with San Jose, whenever there's a name out there, suddenly that name ends up with them, right? You think about Yaroslav Astarov, the goaltender from Nashville. His name gets out there, and boom, he's in San Jose. Timothy Lodgren from Toronto, his name gets out there. Oh, there he goes, San Jose. And I think there's a few other examples of that with the Sharks that, if there's a young player that's available on the trade market, they are willing to go and get them. It's not been a pretty process for the last few years, so I think we can all agree with that. But it is something that they are making aggressive future moves to kind of solidify the coming roster once they do have Celebrini and Smith. I don't want to say fully functional, but fully formed as NHL players instead of rookies this year.
This was a team that's been rebuilding with purpose. I mean, they know it's a long haul, but they are making strides this year to make this team better.
Yeah, and they whenever there's a name out there, you see the Sharks get involved. We know when Yaroslav Askarov's name got out there this summer as a potential trade target, the Sharks hopped on it. When Timothy Lodgren in Toronto became available, the Sharks were right there. And it's one of those things where they have the cap space to do it. They have the I guess the vision to look at what they have and say, let's go find this particular thing out there. And they're doing it with a little purpose. I mean, you look at their prospect pool right now, and they just had two top 10 picks. When you have Celebrini and Dickinson, you had last year, three first round picks, I think. When you have Will Smith and Quentin Musty, and maybe it's just two, I remember forgetting the third, but Quentin Musty was tearing it up in Sudbury with Dalibor Dvorsky last year. So they have some guys coming, and they have some guys on the roster now, and you can see where the vision is to get this to a point wherein Will Smith and Mathen Celebrini are fully formed, functional, dangerous NHL players.
Now you're looking. I got two things on the Blues. One's positive and one's negative. The positive, and you wrote about it. Dylan Holloway has played very well for Jim Montgomery, and I frankly liked what he did in the against the Sharks. He stepped in and answered Clem Costin when Clem had a high hit on Braden Schenn. I didn't see the. I'm with Braden Schenn on that. I didn't see the 4 minutes on that. I thought that should have been matching minors, but I liked how he responded by throwing his body in there. He's been a good player for the Blues since the coaching change, and he's really been a good player all year. There's something there with Dylan Holloway.
Yeah, the 7-game point streak ended against San Jose. Wasn't his best game. I mean, when we talk about the guys who should be covering for defensemen, he was one of those guys that got burned on that. So, not a perfect game from Dylan Holloway, but the overall season for him has been remarkable, to be quite honest. It's funny, I thought about his 7-game point streak, and he was really good in Vancouver even before scoring the overtime goal. He was creating chances, he was blocking shots, he was out in transition. Jim Montgomery liked how many one-on-one battles he won. In the previous week, he was tenacious in puck hunting and on forechecking. He was always kind of around it, so he there's a lot of things to like about Dylan Holloway's game. And ironically, I mean, I think he scored in Edmonton. He generated some chances, but that might have been one of his worst recent games when you look at how well he was actually playing in Vancouver and in Winnipeg and even in Calgary. So the overall body of work for Dylan Holloway, very, very good. And I think when the Blues signed him to that offer sheet, 2 years, $2.29 million. You look at it and say, okay, yeah, they had to overpay a little bit relative to what he would have gotten on the open market. But that's which is what they had to do to get him. And now you look at his production and you look at what Philip Roberg has done, and you look at both of those guys and say, don't think it's quite an overpay. I think they're earning, their money right now with how they're playing, and that's a good thing for the Blues. That they've kind of already got some ROI on the moves this summer, and for Holloway in particular, I don't know what it looks like right now, but when I looked it up a couple nights ago after the Vancouver game, I think of free agents that signed new deals with new teams over the summer, he was 10th in points, and that's a list that included, it was led by a guy like Jake Gensel, and you had a bunch of other names on there, but every other one above him made more money than he did. So he was one of the most efficient free agent acquisitions in the league, and I do think that that gets lost sometimes, that he was actually an RFA or restricted free agent that any team could have gone out there and signed to an offer sheet and then acquired when Edmonton didn't match. But he's been a very good acquisition for the Blues, and quite honestly, you'd say he's been their third or fourth best forward this year, with the kind of down season that Pavel Buchnevich is having so far. But he's been very good, yeah.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die game 7, a full week of heavy hitting back and forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
And one thing about him, well, a couple things. He's a competitive guy, of course, but the work ethic is there. We were talking to Jim on a Sunday, a rare Sunday practice, and in the background there was some banging of a puck being shot, another shot, another shot. And Montgomery was saying, how hard Dylan works, and so that, I bet that's Dylan back there shooting pucks, and it was, he just we've been back and checked, there he was shooting pucks, still working. This has been a guy just seems to love it. It brings a high level of energy to the group. I just like, just adding what he does to the chemistry.
And he is a younger guy that fits within this young core. He grew up playing against Jake Neighbors in Calgary. When he's on the ice late shooting pucks or doing skill drills, a lot of times Jordan Kyrou is right there with him. Like he gets along with the rest of this young group, and he brings a good attitude to it as well. Generally has a smile on his face and a good disposition. So yeah, I think when Jim Montgomery had talked about Dylan Holloway, and he's talked about him a lot recently just because there's been plenty of reasons to talk about him, he always mentions he's a hockey player, and that's one of the highest compliments he believes he can give someone, is that they're just a hockey player, and he feels that Dylan Holloway is one of those.
On a downside, Nick Leddy's tried to give it a go, and it has not gone. There was some hope that he would keep progressing, and maybe even at some point, given the length of the road trip, at some point maybe he could have played since he was with the team, but just can't get over the hump.
Yeah, it's been a weird process. He went on this past road trip, and whenever a guy goes on the road, you either expect him to play during that trip or close after it. That was the case with Robert Thomas. He goes on that trip through Buffalo and Boston and Carolina. The Blues come back home, and bam, he's in the lineup against Minnesota, first home game. Philip Roberg joins the team in New York for that game against the Rangers, for the game against the Devils, doesn't play those, comes back home, plays against the Flyers, bam. So when Nick Leddy was going on the road, maybe he doesn't get in any of those four games, but you look at the schedule and you say, okay, well, is San Jose a possibility for him? And then middle of the trip, he gets sent home from Edmonton. He did practice there on a in an optional practice, that he was there for optional practice. He was there for the morning skate before the Oilers game, and something must have been bothering him again. They knew he wasn't going to play in Vancouver, and so they sent him home to undergo, further testing or treatment. And yeah, it's just been a weird situation. He hasn't played since October 15th. This is kind of the second false start, I would say, in this process. In mid-October, after that, the home opener against Minnesota, he took some time off to was away from the rink for a little bit, and then he started skating again. And this is all the way back before Halloween, up in Montreal on, I think it was October 28 or 29. He practiced with him and then got sent home from that trip, and took maybe, I would say, maybe about a month off after that, and then started skating with the team before that Philadelphia game a few weeks ago, and skated with them for some time, and suddenly again back out again. So I don't know what to make of Nick Leddy's status moving forward. They've luckily been able to lean on Ryan Suter for a lot of minutes. I think that was the initial plan when they first signed Ryan Suter in the summer, that he would play top 4 minutes and likely alongside Justin Falk. Then of course the offer sheets happen, Philip Broberg arrives, and Suter's kind of pushed down in the depth chart. But when you look at the role that he's playing right now, top four mid minutes, whether it's next to Falk or whether it's next to Parayko, this is something that the Blues envisioned with Suter, and for the most part he's played well. There have been some hiccups here and there, but you can't ask any player to be perfect. And for what the Blues are paying Suter, and the role that they started the season with him in, and his age, I think he's performed well. I just don't know when there's even a plausible return for Nick Leddy at this point, given the uncertainty surrounding his injury and the kind of false starts with it.
Yeah, and I guess the biggest thing at this point is that, well, it's unfortunate for Nick, who's one of the good guys, but this is a guy that you might have been able to use to capture back some draft capital, maybe some middle round picks at the trade deadline, if you're willing to, work with the team on retention, just to provide for someone else to get some depth. So another team that maybe was playoff bound, this was a possibility. Instead, he's looks like he's going to miss the bulk of the season, if not the rest of it, based on what we've seen so far. So I guess it's fortunate that they did make as many moves as they did to shore up the blue line, including bringing in Joseph, who has been useful moving in and out of the lineup, but it's certainly not a terrible fallback given what this team has gone through with injuries.
Yeah, I think the flip side to that is that maybe Ryan Suter could bring them back some pieces too, this is a guy on a 1 year contract who's never won a cup, who does have performance bonuses included in his contract. And towards the end, I have checked on this before in previous seasons. The team that player is playing for when they hit that bonus is the team who has to pay that bonus. So Ryan Suter is on a league minimum salary with $2.225 million in performance bonuses, and he's already hit two of them. He got 225,000 for playing 10 games. He got 400,000 for playing 30 games, which happened in last night, right? Last night was 30 games. And he had half a mil for 40 games, 600,000 for 60 games, and 500,000 if the team makes the playoffs. So if they make a move, let's say before he plays 60 games, and he plays for another team and they make the playoffs, that's 1.1 million that the Blues would be able to save, and maybe get some draft capital back for a veteran defenseman who's been hard to play against in the playoffs. He's got a mean streak to him. I think we saw that a few years ago when Dallas played Minnesota in the first round, and that's his former team, and they were not happy with the way that he was treating Kirill Kaprizov at the net front. It was cross-check city around the crease. So he's someone who does have some value, I think, if he keeps playing this way, keeps playing the big minutes. And a contending team that adds him will probably be looking more towards a third pair role for him, killing some penalties, taking on tough defensive assignments, being hard at the net front, versus feeding him 22 to 25 minutes a night. But for right now, the Blues are kind of forced into using him in a top four role, and I think he's done okay with it.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a bargain for somebody when if it comes to that. Because a guy like Cam Fowler, great, he's a player, but the monetary situation is a bit different for him. Cap situation, there are going to be some guys available. Maybe Jacob Trouba gets moved again, but boy, for his price point, it's and what he's done, the minutes he's played, again, the reputation that he has, that he gets a little leeway perhaps with the referees. This is a he's just fits he fit in so well with this team. It's hard to not it's easy to imagine him fitting in very well anywhere else. I mean, if I'm a contender, this is a guy I'm keeping a very close watch on as this thing gets closer. And of course, I don't know how the Blues would replace his minutes given their circumstances, but if they're going to play the long game, certainly that's going to be something to look at. Or just say, hey, how about can you come back one more year? How many years can you play hockey?
I do think this conversation is it's important to note that like this is in the scenario where the Blues are out of it, right? I think if they're close, I don't think they're selling much. I think they look at this season as wanting to make the playoffs. They've missed the last 2 years. They kind of they're past the asset accumulation point right now. They're not aiming to have another high draft pick. They want to take a step forward, make the playoffs, and kind of get that experience back, and to have the younger core kind of grow through that together. They want to make the playoffs, and I think if they're close, we're not going to be seeing these types of moves. But if they're not, and right now there's only I think four teams worse than them in the Western Conference, if they're not in it, I think these are moves that are very possible, I would think.
Yeah, as much as well as they've played for Jim Montgomery, I think the top teams in the league, there's a real the tops on this side of the league, let's say the top seven teams anyways, I really think are just different. Maybe there's that one spot that can some you'll end up contending for based on somebody falling back a bit, but the top part of the league of this side of the league is pretty good. And of course now Winnipeg slowed down, the Wild just had a bad loss. Things happen. But it's not like the East. So there's a lot of work to do. If the Blues want to avoid this question that we just, this scenario that we just threw out here at the end of the podcast, they got a lot of work to do. And, they've done a good work for Jim Montgomery, but man, it is a long road to stay in the chase. You just look at the upcoming schedule. Just look at the weekend. This is not going to be easy.
Yeah, so basically in the West, you're looking at so Minnesota, Winnipeg, Dallas, top three in the Central, Vegas, LA, Vancouver, top three in the Pacific. The two wild cards right now, by points percentage, which is the way I always like to look at it. I think it's so silly when teams play different games and we're looking at point numbers. But two wild cards in the West would be Edmonton and Calgary, and so that doesn't include Colorado right now. Colorado would not be in the playoffs currently. And we think they're a good enough team to get there. And maybe as you talking about that seventh, that eighth spot, I guess, Calgary, that one being up for grabs, and you're worrying about maybe Seattle getting in there, Colorado getting up there, Utah's ahead of the Blues right now. Like those are the teams that they're fighting for. And Nashville, I mean, they're so far back right now, it's tough to see them making a run, but they had playoff aspirations before the season began too.
Colorado will keep trading for goaltenders until they fix this. And if it's not fixed by next week, somebody else is going to the Mile High City.
You got
So
it. You're gonna be able to kick him out for the Avs. You gonna be in the market or what?
I don't know. It's funny. I feel I like that team otherwise, and they've gotten healthier. But man, the old adage, well, anybody can play goal for us, and we've proved that before. Yeah, or not. So, but that team, I mean, they're gonna go on a run at some point. There's just too much there, and when they got Nichushkin back and they got healthier, I mean, they just Makar, MacKinnon, Rantanen. I mean, my goodness. But anyways, we'll see. We're not gonna discourage our Blues fans just yet. I think this team is gonna stay in the chase. We'll see how it all plays out. This has been the NetFront Presence. A reminder that you could get this podcast and all of our other extra content on. That's not in the print edition of the Post-Dispatch on our digital edition of the Post-Dispatch at stltoday.com. Of course, there's also the e-edition if you want to use that to read the newspaper. The print edition can be read on your tablet. So check all that out on stltoday.com. Until next time, for Matthew DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. See ya.